Our third speaker is Professor Ben Powell. Ben teaches economics at San Jose. He was a graduate student at George Mason University who worked with Peter Betke. He's associated with the well-known Independent Institute. And when I decided to look up some of the things he had published so that I could mention them here, I decided that the best thing to tell you was that he publishes more in 1 year than most of us publish in a professional lifetime. Ben Powell.
Thank you, Nick. I'm honored to be here to speak to you all today. Although this late in the day now, after following two accomplished and entertaining speakers, I can relate to how some of Liz Taylor's later husbands must have felt on their wedding night. I'm here, I know what to do and how I'm supposed to do it, but now I need to try to come up with a way to make it interesting for you. Joking aside, I think this is an important issue, and we have everybody up here has great free market credentials, but yet we have differing views on immigration policy. I think some of my differing views come on this from a difference in the economic estimations and looking more fundamentally at what I think our underlying problems are. I really think the problems we observe with immigration are only symptoms of more underlying perverse institutional problems that we have in the United States, and those are what we need to address more directly. I want to be clear from the outset, though. I don't support current U.S. immigration policy. Our current immigration problems stem from both a mixed interventionist economy and a weird set of rules on how we're going to allow immigrants to come in where we bias it against Europe for parts of the third world. So I agree with my colleagues, or at least with Peter in his published book, that the 1965 immigration law and subsequent act should be repealed. Where I differ is that I want to support open borders for all immigrants from any location, in any quantity, so long as they're free of disease, demonstrated criminal record, and there's some private property owner in the United States who's willing to let them on the property. I don't advocate this because I believe in any special right to immigration. I don't think there is one. And for that matter, the other thing that my liberal colleagues at San Jose State, not in the economics department, believe in, things like diversity, multiculturalism, or what other undefinable PC buzzwords they might be using, I don't think these are necessarily good. And in fact, when I hear women's studies professors or sociologists on my campus use the words, I usually want to throw up. I favor open immigration policy because I think it's the right policy for American citizens who live here today. So let me begin with some of the economics. The numbers that we were talking about, a lot of these come through what we call a Harberger triangle method of estimating the immigration surplus. George Borjas is the economist who's done this quite a lot. And I did resist the urge to write out any equations before I came here today, but I couldn't resist the urge of an economist to make a graph. But fortunately, you've been spared because there's no overhead projector. So we'll just talk about it for a second. Basically, it's a method where they look at the increase in the labor force and see what the overall output gain to the economy is, the effect it's going to have on wages and output, and then see what the surplus is, the net overall gain to the economy. Borjas, his latest estimates in his forthcoming article in David Henderson, a guy we all know, who's editing a new encyclopedia of economics, Borjas' paper for that, he estimates the gain to be about 0.2% of GDP growth, or otherwise $22 billion per year. Now, I agree with my colleagues that 0.2% or $22 billion sounds kind of small when we consider the size of our economy, but even still compounded over time, this can add up. And I just think that just because a gain is small doesn't mean that it doesn't count. There are trillions of regulations on our economy that all have small inefficiencies, and these all add up, and we as conservatives and classical liberals don't oppose getting rid of them just because the gains are small. I mean, I think all of us would be happy to end rent control in Berkeley, California. The gains are definitely much smaller than the 0.2% or $22 billion. And the $22 billion, I mean, a gain is a gain. It's a heck of a lot better than a loss. But I think the Borjas estimate and the whole Harberger triangle method of estimating it actually grossly underestimates the size of the gain from immigration. The method of Harberger triangle measurement, this is what economists started using to measure the inefficiency cost of monopoly in our economy. In the 1960s, economists went around trying to measure these, and they figured out that the triangles were fairly small, and some started to conclude that government-sanctioned monopolies aren't that big a problem. It took a former professor of mine and a good friend to many of you, Gordon Tullock, to point out in his famous 1967 article that he's still waiting for his Nobel Prize for, that it's not just the hopefully due anytime soon, he's just gotta keep hanging in there. Although the pessimists say that they're trying to wait him out so that they can give it to Kruger without giving it to her, giving it to him. Anyhow, but it took him to point out the area we considered a transfer could also actually become a net loss to society. And it's because government hands out this political favor, this right of privilege to a monopolist, that they have an incentive to go and seek and try to get this transfer from. And they're going to invest in economically unproductive activities, such as lobbying, in order to go get it. And then the effort and the resources devoted to that, those are a net loss for our society as well. So some of the value of what economists previously were just considering transfers, Tullock pointed out, that's actually a net loss too. Since then, the large literature has developed in public choice, figuring out exactly what conditions they're going to over-deplete the rent, exactly deplete it or under-deplete it. But either way, the one thing that comes out of all of those public choice models is that there will be significant cost in addition to the triangle. Now, Borjars, when he does these Harburger triangle estimates, and so far as I can tell, every other economic study on this that I've read, completely leaves this out. They assume that all will be lost is the triangle, and that the transfer is just going to be one from U.S. workers to U.S. owners of capital and real estate. But for this to be even partially true, you'd have to have a move in immigration policy from now to complete restriction that has essentially no political cost, no political fight. How likely is that? To quote from Peter Brimlow's book, Alienation, it will be resisted hysterically. It will be sabotaged in every possible way. It will probably require repeated legislation. He continues, it could quite easily destroy the present political party system. This is telling us that rectangle could be pretty darn big. In fact, in trade policy, in the Journal of Political Economy, they estimated that once you count the political lobbying cost of trade restrictions, it increases the loss by a factor of 10 compared to just the little triangle. So if that applies to immigration, that would take you from $22 billion to $220 billion. We've heard the quotes about politicians who say a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon we start talking about some money. 220, now we're talking about some money. And I don't think that's at all unreasonable given the passion of the political fight that would occur. Now, this isn't to claim that some workers won't lose. Those who compete with unskilled labor, as mentioned, will likely face increased competition and will see their wages pushed down a little bit. Although actually the economic evidence on this is actually fairly sketchy. The Journal of Economic Perspective, which summarizes large chunks of literature, recently concluded that, quote, despite the popular belief that immigrants have a large adverse impact on the wages and employment opportunities of the native-born population, the literature on this question does not provide much support for this conclusion. Even if it could be shown that their wages decrease substantially, I think we as conservatives and classical liberals shouldn't use this as a reason to favor restricting immigration for these workers' benefits. Virtually any policy that restricts competition in our economy benefits some people at the expense of others. Unless we can argue persuasively that these people have some right to their job or particular wage, a classical liberal can't condone restricting competition to favor that person. Now, I agree that immigration has other economic costs, not just these efficiency gains, particularly when they're allowed to come here and receive transfers from all of us. So the most obvious of these is when an immigrant moves here to receive welfare. Critics of immigration point out that immigrants are more likely to go and receive welfare than the general population. Some point out even that they think the trend is increasing, though recent research by Vetter and Galloway shows that the proportion of people receiving welfare who are immigrants hasn't changed much since 1970, once you control for other factors. Despite this, though, it's still a big concern. I mean, in my state of California, where I'm from now, now, it's a good thing this is after lunch, because this will probably turn a few stomachs. A two-child family that comes to California can get a $7,200 welfare cash benefit, another $3,000 in food stamps, $6,500 in Medicaid. That's over $16,000 in welfare assistance by coming to the United States. That's substantially above the per capita income of a number of countries in the world. So it's something we should be concerned about. Milton Friedman maybe put it best when he said, it's just obvious. You can't have free immigration and a welfare state. To this, I think we should all respond, hear, hear, and it is time to attack the welfare state. Now, I doubt there are many supporters of the welfare state in this crowd, but I think it's still a mistake to take the existence of the welfare state for granted and use it as an excuse for government interventions in immigration. Ludwig von Mises pointed this out in his book, The Dynamics of Interventionism. One government policy intervention creates unintended and undesirable consequences, and now policymakers are confronted with a choice of make further interventions to try to deal with those consequences or repeal the old ones. All too often, they choose the former. Mises pointed out that our role is to fight back the existing interventions so that the economy won't keep tending down the road to serfdom. Now, almost everybody in here would be opposed to rent control, but if you have rent control, then landlords have an incentive to convert their apartments into condominiums and sell them off so they can get market value. But that's clearly undesirable from our intent to help the poor. There's fewer apartments to go around. They have a harder time. I don't think many of us, though, would condone placing further property restrictions on landlords so they can't do that. Instead, would attack the root cause, rent control, and say that's what we need to fight. I think the same should be applied to the welfare state and immigration. Conservatives and classical liberals should focus their energy on rolling back the welfare state instead of trying to limit immigration. I think if a case is going to be made for limiting immigration, it has to be independent of these welfare costs. Now, some may reply that politically it's not likely we can eliminate the welfare state right now. Well, also politically it would take a huge fight to have complete immigration restriction right now. If we're going to... us must learn from the success of the socialists was that it was their courage to be utopian which gained them support. He continues, we need intellectual leaders who are willing to work for an ideal, however small may be the prospects of its early realization. This is the position we should be fighting for in the immigration and welfare state, not a temporary band-aid of slowing down immigration. Now, of course, there are other spillover costs, public education, especially with bilingual ed being mandatory in some places, public roads that have congestions. But here, too, we have things that aren't consistent with a perfectly free market economy. We should be looking to address these at their root instead of restricting immigration. Virtually every economic cost of immigration that spills over onto current residents is a case of a mixed interventionist economy. It's either a welfare state problem, a different intervention in the economy, or a tragedy of the commons. In all of those cases, the answer should be private property rights reform and free markets. Now, the immigration restrictions not only create a new intervention, but they fail to address these underlying problems at all. It doesn't change. Restricting immigration won't change all of the spillover costs these things currently have right now between native citizens of America. Immigration, in fact, would put pressure on us to reform these things and therefore should be welcomed. In the correct institutional setting, immigration could be an unambiguous economic gain for us. Reform towards those institutions is what we should be agitating for. Moving beyond economics, what about our culture, our American values, self-reliance, hard work, individual initiative? Couldn't bringing people in from other cultures undermine those values or even worse, pervert our politics? American values have undoubtedly changed over the last 200 years. Most of the public has moved away from these traditional values and come to believe that our nanny state is necessary. People have learned that instead of serving consumers to get ahead, they can lobby the government for transfers, use the court system for fraudulent lawsuits, beg the antitrust regulators to go after their less efficient competition, their more efficient competition, or to take government handouts in between jobs or worse yet, nearly permanently. Values have changed as our institutional environment has changed. As acts of Congress and court decisions have eroded our original constitution environment, they have distorted the incentives facing people in our economy. As the benefits to unproductive entrepreneurship, what economists call rent-seeking, essentially going after transfers, as these benefits have increased, more people engage in transfer-seeking. This has eroded our culture. The costs and benefits people face influence our cultural values over the course of time, and it's true of both immigrants and natives. The post-1965 immigrant wave is different than prior ones, in part because of a policy that biases us against Europe, but also because this is the first immigrant wave that's come here since we've had a welfare state in place. They're different not because their place of origin is different or their culture is different, but because our culture is different. Those who came here before, they might come here and fail and have to go home. Few get sent home today. Instead, they're taught to assimilate into a system of government reliance where failure and laziness are rewarded, not punished. Unfortunately, the welfare state makes these immigrants not only less productive, but it teaches them to undermine our American values. The problem is not unique to the immigrants. All of our culture is being perverted like this. It's not something, and to get the idea of it not being something wholly about ethnicity or place of origin, think about some of the natural experiments. China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, North and South Korea, Ireland and Northern Ireland. in places where you have essentially the same geography, the same ethnicity, but yet political and economic cultures are completely different. In each case, one group adopted a system of more of a free market environment like we have in the United States. Their economy flourished and their culture grew to support it. While an otherwise similar culture and group of people adopted different institutions and has since stagnated. In both cases, the culture can perpetuate. Ethnicity alone doesn't determine what values a group will hold. Culture evolves to respond to these costs and benefits. We need to focus on creating the right institutional environment in the U.S. so the immigrants who come here will assimilate into the old American values, not our new perverted ones created by the nanny state. Another concern is security. What about a terrorist wave trying to immigrate here? Well, just because we're going to have open borders doesn't mean that we have to let criminals in. People with criminal records should not be free to roam our street, immigrant, native, or otherwise. We could move to a system of open immigration where you have checkpoints where you allow them across the border. And if we make a credible commitment that everybody without a criminal record is allowed in, this is going to dramatically decrease our illegal immigration problem. The illegal crossings are going to be confined to just the terrorists and the criminals. This frees up resources in our border patrol so they can go after just those fewer people who are the real troublemakers instead of having them delude their resources by going after a whole bunch of people who just want to come here to work. By opening our borders with legitimate checkpoints like this, you'd actually make us more safe, not less. Finally, I do think there's an important ethical argument that needs to be considered for immigration policy. The rights of current American citizens to freedom of association. Our fundamental American cultural values were a right to life, liberty, property. Those rights imply a freedom to sell or rent your home, associate in business with, or have as a guest on your property, anyone you choose. Immigrants have no special right to come here, just as I have no special right to walk on your private property. The right for immigration lies with our property owners in the United States to associate with whomever they please, be they an American citizen or not. Current immigration policy unjustly puts a filter on our own right of freedom of association. The government has no just reason to place a blanket filter on who we can associate with. The only people who should be filtered out are those who have demonstrated that they have no respect for our rights of life, liberty, property, namely criminals. And these people should be filtered out whether they're natives or immigrants. Any filter beyond that is an unjust restriction on the very freedoms that we as Americans used to hold dear. Thank you.